Light rail transit is an idea whose time came, went, and is trying to make a comeback. Vancouver used to have it. Back then it was called the streetcar. As a transit system, it served the city well. Set out as a grid, it allowed riders to easily get from point A to point B, a grid that helped shape the creation of many of the city's favorite neighborhoods. That's because streetcars put people on the streets, and along the way injected life into Carisdale and Dunbar and Kitts and Cambie, Maine, Granville, Kingsway and Hastings Streets, just to name a half dozen or so. From 1890 to 1958, BC Electric built and operated interurban trains and streetcar lines throughout Metro Vancouver and into the Fraser Valley. By the 1940s, the Lower Mainland followed the rails-to-rubber trend that was sweeping throughout North America. Buses, some were electric, but most were diesel, replaced the streetcar. 4 decades later, SkyTrain was introduced, and it has helped move people over long distances and quickly. However, for some urban planners, SkyTrain is not seen as a community builder. Rather, they choose to see it as an expensive people mover. Patrick Condon says LRT complements a larger transit network. It saves taxpayers money, and most importantly, it puts people on the street, and it has the potential to shape the communities it serves. All of which begs the question, why has it taken us so long to get back to a good idea? We invited one of LRT's strongest local advocates, urban designer, planner, and professor, Patrick Condon, to join us for a conversation that matters about why it's time to turn our attention away from SkyTrain and back to LRT.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to see that you're not running for mayor, but that does not take away from your credentials as somebody who understands urban planning and, in particular, transportation models. We've got SkyTrain. Remember when SkyTrain first came along, 1986? Interesting concept. It's grown out, and in many ways, would you say it has served the Lower Mainland reasonably well?
I would say it has served the mainland reasonably well. But of course, the problem with it is that it's unsuited for a comprehensive backbone system. The biggest drawback with it is that it was the greatest thing invented in 1980, but since that time, it's proven to not be something that other cities are following in the use of. One of the big problems with it is it's relatively miniature. If you've ridden on it, you realize that the cars, not for the Canada line, which is a whole different technology, but for the Expo and Millennium line, they're like 3/4 scale. They're like a mini metro, they're called. And because the cross section is small, your stations have to be a lot longer, and to put them through tunnels, when it becomes extremely expensive per unit of people that you deliver. So most other parts of the world, they've moved very much away from this kind of technology, and leaving us, Vancouver, as the only one in the world that's really married to this technology.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have to admit that it does move people across a great distance reasonably well. Like, if I want to get from downtown Vancouver to Surrey, SkyTrain is a great way to get there. But once I'm in Surrey, I get off one of those stations, getting to anywhere else becomes a challenge. I got to get onto a bus or some other kind of ground transportation, which doesn't allow me to move around in a in a neighborhood kind of community very well.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because our region, certainly New Westminster and Vancouver, used to have a network of rail back in the day. It was removed in the 1950s. Of course, it's called the streetcar.
Mm-hmm.
And taking Vancouver as an example, pretty much every arterial in the city had a streetcar line. 4th Avenue, Broadway, Main Street, certainly Hastings, 41st Avenue in Carisdale. They all had streetcar lines, and those were all removed. The important thing about that is it was a network. It was so wherever you were, you could easily go wherever you wanted to go by just making one transfer. Unfortunately, the SkyTrain system and its associated bus routes are what we call hub and spoke systems. They all go to the downtown, particularly downtown Vancouver, and increasingly now The importance of Surrey's downtown is significant, but once you get there, you have to go radially. Now, that's okay if you want to go downtown, or if your trip includes downtown, but if you're starting here and you want to go here and downtown is over here, you have to go like that. Whereas a network is much easier to go where you want, because if you're starting here and you want to go here, you don't have to go to the downtown. You can go like that in a two-seat ride. That's much shorter.
So what was the reasoning behind getting or removing the streetcar lines? If we're thinking and we're looking at LRT, in essence, that's what streetcars were. What was the thinking at some point that said, oh no, this isn't the way for us to go into the future?
Well, every city, virtually without exception, the only real exception in North America is Toronto, removed their streetcar systems in the 50s. There was a couple of reasons for that. Everybody was really fascinated with the idea of rubber tires, getting around on rubber vehicles, so buses were sold as much superior to the streetcars. That was an easy sell in those days because the streetcars had fallen into disrepair. The companies that ran them were going bankrupt. So some smart entrepreneurs came in and were able to sell communities, particularly General Motors, were able to sell communities on the advantages of rubber-tired, modernistic, they were sold as futuristic vehicles, and much more comfortable, which was in fact not the case, as anyone who's ridden rubber-tired buses and tried to stand up for long distance can certainly attest. But they were sold as much better and much cheaper and much more flexible. So almost every community in North America basically ripped out their streetcar lines and put bus lines in instead. Simultaneously with this was middle class people were suddenly able to afford automobiles. So the percentage of people using transit of any kind went down to pathetic levels that it is now. We're lucky to have something like 15% of our trips in this region are by transit. That doesn't sound like a very big number until you look at Phoenix's number, for example, which is less than 2% of all trips are in transit. So at least some of our workers are using transit still. But most people did move to cars, so no one really cared about transit anymore. So transit was left as the conveyance method of last resort. You know, what I say in my lectures is, in many places, the only time people use the buses is when their car is in the repair shop, and that's really quite true.
Or if they don't own a car because they can't afford a car.
Or if they're too poor.
Right.
But it turns out that the poor in most North American cities, particularly American cities, buy a junker. They have to have one in order to survive, and increasingly you'll see situations where people give up their apartment before they give up their car, and they'll sleep in their car. In some locations, Atlanta is a good example of that happening right now. So, okay, but the next thing to say about that is that in the 70s and 80s, most municipalities, this one included, started to say, whoa, wait a minute, we've got all these cars on the road now, what are we gonna do? Our freeways are jammed, our streets are plugged up. So they turned again to look at transit systems at that point to try to convince people to leave their cars at home. So they started investing, and Vancouver is one of these cases. They started to invest in very expensive transit systems. Rather than going back to less expensive streetcar systems, they chose instead to choose very expensive but somewhat faster systems like the SkyTrain that could get you from Surrey to downtown Vancouver in a relatively short amount of time. It's only very recently that light rail has come back into favor in most parts of the world because of the rediscovery, really, of the value of a network pattern of transit, that it's better to have a network, a grid of interconnected surface light rail systems. Portland, Oregon is a good example of this. Interconnected light rail systems instead of having what we call a hub and spoke system, which we started to build with these expensive systems like SkyTrain in the 1980s.
So you mentioned Toronto earlier, and I think about their transportation system. They've got the subway, they've got the GO train system, and then they also have streetcars. And One of the things that I find in all those lines where there are streetcars, the sense of community on each one of those routes is at street level.
Yeah, this is a very important point. You know, my expertise isn't really in transportation. It's more in sustainable community design with transportation as a part of that. And if you look at Vancouver's best neighborhoods, pretty much all the neighborhoods are pretty good. And they're pretty good because they have that quality of these arterials with continuous commercial along them. Mm-hmm. And when you're on those commercial streets, you meet your neighbors, you go to the store, and ideally you can get on a bus and take it to where you want to go. This is the legacy of the streetcar system that used to be here. That pattern evolved organically as a response to the presence of the streetcar. Streetcars are no longer here, but they were, and that's why Hastings looks the way it does. That's why Dunbar Street looks the way it does. That's why Main Street looks the way it does.
Broadway, so on. Yeah.
All of them. Fourth Avenue, Broadway, 10th Avenue and Point Grey. They're all the consequence. They all have this very particular form of linear commercial strips. It's very peculiar, and it's very characteristic to North American cities and not found so much elsewhere. This idea of a very long, continuous commercial corridor, originally served by streetcar. In Toronto, it was still served by streetcar. Unfortunately, here in Vancouver, we removed them.
So you take a look at a jurisdiction like Surrey, which didn't have the population concentration that Vancouver was experiencing as it was growing, and it's really only in the last 25, 30 years that we've started to see greater density in Surrey, partly because it could spread out. Would the introduction of an LRT system into Surrey, which of course they're working on right now, but will that then start to change the nature of the makeup of the streets that are being served by LRT?
It should. It's been shown to do that in other locations. It should. So their choice to do their first intervention, not of the SkyTrain type with the light rail, is along those lines. It's particularly important on King George Highway, which connects Surrey City Center to Newton Town Center. And there's a lot of potential along that road for that to turn into a community, what is now just a suburban highway feel in those locations. And also, interestingly, the City of Surrey recently put out a visioning for what they want to be in 2050 once they get these first two lines built. And they're showing their community having a whole series of lines that go east-west and north-south to create and recreate, but in the case of Surrey, create for the first time a rail network that is an interconnected system rather than a hub-and-spoke system. It works very well in Surrey because their arterials are a half mile apart, which is a very common vocabulary for North American communities. So they can support that arterial network with this relatively cheap, I say relatively because it still costs money, but it's compared to a subway or compared to SkyTrain, it's one-tenth of the cost if they do it right. This relatively cheap rail system, which tends to build community along its lines.
Mm-hmm. The question of how many people can you move? Can LRT move the same volume of people in a time period that a larger mass transit system like SkyTrain can? And I find myself at the moment when I'm asking the question thinking about what you just said. Yeah, but our SkyTrain system isn't like full size. You know, you go to New York and you take a look at those trains. They are trains.
Yeah, I mean, I get this question all the time and it makes me want to pull my hair out. The contention is that the Broadway system needs to be SkyTrain in order to move a high capacity. And they say that they want to have something with a capacity of, in technical terms, it's called people per direction per hour. So they want to get 20,000 people per direction per hour. I got two things to say about that. The first is that there are systems in Europe that have 35,000 people per direction per hour. So it certainly can be done, a surface rail system. They have trains go by that are coupled sets of six cars that come by every minute and a half. So it's a very efficient system, and the one that I'm thinking of at the moment. But so the answer is yes, you can. The second part of it is that the Broadway corridor presently only has a transit load, even though people always talk about how crowded it is and all this, only has a transit load of around 4,000 during peak, 4,000 people per direction per hour. This is something they're not publicizing, but it's the truth. When they're challenged on why do they need 20,000, they say, well, we're building it for the future. Well, there's not that much along that line once you get beyond Arbutus. I mean, UBC is a draw, but we don't expect UBC to go from 40,000, from 30,000, 35,000 students presently to what? To 150,000? So the only way that they would ever get the demand for that 20,000 people per direction per hour would be to build tower complexes on the order of Metrotown, certainly at the two sites that are being talked about now, which is the Jericho Lands and the UBC golf course. My complaint about that is if that's the only reason that you can justify spending really an additional, well, if it goes all the way out to UBC, it'll be an additional at least $6 billion beyond what you could have done for $1 billion on the surface. If you really want to justify that additional $5 billion, how can you do that just by saying you're going to build all these unaffordable condos that nobody can afford to buy into in the city of Vancouver? We have a problem of housing affordability. Our housing affordability problem is bigger than our transportation problem. Building for the future of an unaffordable future is, I think, downright immoral.
So I also think about the aesthetics of the SkyTrain system. It's not that attractive to look at. You see it gets punched through different neighborhoods and so on. The neighborhoods that are on that path, especially like in the immediate sort of noise envelope around SkyTrain, look like they've been adversely affected by it.
Yeah, the best you can do with a SkyTrain system, which is a separated metro system, the best you can do with any separated system, whether it goes above ground or below ground, is that it doesn't do serious harm. So a below ground system usually doesn't do serious harm.
Right.
It doesn't add anything to the street. If you have a conveyance vehicle, and those of us who have traveled in Europe extensively probably can certify to this, if you have a surface rail system, in most cases they add quite a bit to the street. They're an aesthetically positive addition to commercial streets. They also bring more customers to the street. If you're on the vehicle, you can see the stores and you can see the people as you go by. So it has a synergy with the street environment, with the public realm of the street, which I, as a designer and as someone who's interested in sustainable communities, that's one of its major attractions for me.
Well, I agree with you. As I hear you say that, I'm thinking, yeah, the light rail system actually puts people on the street and not, you know, 10 block stretches away from one another. They're one block after the next. You can get on and get off.
Yeah, you can already see the negative consequence of this in certain parts of Vancouver. Cambie Street, for example, close to the Park Theater, the old commercial center, the original streetcar-served commercial center there where the Park Theater is, has declined markedly. The commercial activity, the number of people on the street has declined markedly since the Candle Line went underneath, and the people on the Candle Line going underneath on that street, they don't know there's a street up there.
Well, yeah, because of the distance between the King Ed station and City Hall.
They can't get off.
You can't get off, and it's too far to walk in between stations.
Well, see, this is the balancing act, and separated systems usually are chosen because they want to take people long distances in a short amount of time. And because that's their objective, they usually choose not to have many stations. Therefore, the stations are further apart. That means if you live between stations, you usually have a very long walk just to get to that station. And if you have a store along that line in between stations, you don't get any pedestrian traffic anymore that you used to get when there was a bus there. So that's a factor that's never considered, never articulated. People get focused on, oh, it goes really fast from point A to point B, but if you include the amount of time it takes the average person to walk to the station and get down below ground or above ground, it often turns out that a surface rail system is much quicker than a separated system.
Well, especially if you want to go to a point in between stations.
Absolutely.
So, do you think that it's time for us now to say, okay, we've had a great run with SkyTrain, let's keep it going, add to it, but we need to turn our attention to LRT.
Well, I've long argued that Broadway was the ideal point at which to change. Certainly, the silly way that the Millennium Line stops right at VCC Clark in the middle of nowhere, essentially, is something that needs rectification. And to bring that line all the way to connect to the Canada line is probably sensible. But beyond that, we're at a point, we probably were at a point a long time ago, where we should think about now that we have a backbone that essentially, that's called a backbone system in transportation parlance. Now that we have a backbone system that goes through the middle of the region, at the extremities of the region, it's appropriate to switch to a potentially somewhat slower, but more neighborhood serving system, more convenient for neighborhoods. The Broadway corridor would be a place where I think that would be most appropriate, as well as other corridors.
So why have we been so slow to get around to that?
We're totally in love with SkyTrain. And in the absence of experience with anything else on the surface, we continue to say, for example, the political debate out in Surrey. Right now, the mayor candidate, former Mayor McCallum, has come forward saying, why do we want surface rail? That's the cheap system. We want the good system. We want the SkyTrain system. We generally don't have any experience with an elegant transit system on the surface to convince us politically, the average person, to convince the average person that this would be a much better idea. So that's, of course, my frustration.
Well, I think that Toronto is a perfect example that you pointed out. All you need to have done is spent a day or two in Toronto and see how magnificently that LRT system moves you around the city. Yeah. It is a city that you can truly get around without a car.
It is a streetcar city. You know, yeah. In my last book, I have a whole chapter devoted to the idea of a streetcar city. So Toronto is a streetcar city. Vancouver is a streetcar city, too, just that they got rid of the streetcars. But the city is still a streetcar city.
Well, it would be wonderful to see you come back. Thank you for coming in and sharing this with us.
Yeah, anytime.